In today's episode,
changing from a plowed system to a non-inversion tillage system is not just changing your plow for a different sort. It is, well, if you do that, you'll probably run into trouble. If you look at your whole farming system, then you can make a success of it.
So we found last year that actually at the more mature site, the site that's been under direct drill for 20 odd years, the best yields were obtained in a non-inversion tillage scenario. Whereas at the site that's typically been ploughed for the last few decades, the plants yielded best under the plough-based system.
Welcome to Cropcast. I'm Tiffany McTaggart, and today we're joined by Professor Adrian Newton from the James Hutton Institute and Dr. Henry Creason from SRUC. I'm very excited to have them with us today to talk about integrated pest management and non-inversion tillage. If you listen to the end of this episode, you'll also hear an update from out in the field. Thanks, Henry and Adrian, for joining me today. Henry, do you want to start by introducing yourself?
Thanks, Tiffany. I'm Henry Creason. I'm a researcher in the crop protection team based at King's Buildings for SOC. And my background is really in applied plant pathology and integrated pest management.
And the same for you, Adrian.
Yes, Adrian Newton. I'm at the James Hutton Institute based in Invergarry. And I'm a cereal pathologist or agroecologist, I think, more these days.
Excellent. So two great people to be talking about IPM and tillage today. So, Henry, do you want to just start by just a brief introduction to IPM?
So IPM is a holistic approach to pest management, which aims to maximise productivity and profitability whilst minimising the negative impacts of production on the environment. So it's farming profitably in an environmentally sensitive manner.
That's definitely a great way to sum up IPM. Adrian, do you have anything to add?
Well, just thinking about what goes into it, it's about lots of different components. The sum of them together might be more than the components separately. So it's about just combining different things together in a complementary way. And that's why we need to understand what each bit does. And hopefully some of the things we're going on to talk about those different components and how it's really important to understand how they work together. So it's not about just having a magic wand to solve a particular problem. It's about using lots of different things together.
Yes, it's about that optimal mix of pest control techniques and tools. Yeah. And as Adrian said, there's a lot of interactions that can occur between these pest management techniques that we have to take into consideration when recommending IPM programs.
Henry, Adrian, you've both been doing a lot of work around IPM and tillage. Do you want to just give a brief overview of the projects which you're involved in? Henry, do you want to start?
Sure. So over the last few years, Adrian and I have been working together on a Mains of Lawston funded project looking at the effect of tillage regimes, so non-inversion tillage versus plough in a winter barley crop. So we're looking at two different winter barley varieties, one more resistant than the other to the main disease threat, Brincosporium. And we're looking at how they perform under three different tillage regimes. So whether it's direct drill, in which we remove the infected crop residue, or direct drill, where we're leaving that trash on the surface, and then a plough-based system. And those crops are experiencing either zero or one or two sprays. So they'll either get a T0, a T1, T2, just a T1, a T1, a T2, or they're unsprayed. So we can look at the effect of tillage regime and how that interacts with varietal resistance, leading to disease levels and therefore fungicide requirements. We've been very fortunate in that we've been allowed to conduct this trial at site that's been ploughed for the last few decades at the James Hutton Institute. And also, not too far away in Leven, we've been fortunate in that one of the farmers there, Doug Christie at Drury Farms, is allowing us to plough up a portion of his field, which has been in direct drill for the last 20 odd years, to look at these sort of comparisons and how those interactions affect management decisions. And that's really what we're designing these trials to do, is to give farmers the best evidence so they can make better decisions around this relatively unexplored, at least from a scientific and plot-based trial design system, how they should be considering the challenges and dealing with the challenges of switching between different systems. And any change in practice, there are going to be new challenges to consider.
Adrian, what are the projects that you're working on?
Yeah, we've been looking at varieties growing under inversion and non-inversion tillage for quite a few years under different systems. And that work has been funded by the Scottish Government RESAS programme initially, and then some work together with Henry on Lauriston funding. We also have a couple of research platforms at Hutton, one which is called Greaves House, which is looking at inversion and non-inversion tillage long-term under spring and winter rotations. And there we're looking in great deal of detail, root structure and soil structure and composition as well. And the other is the Centre for Sustainable Cropping, which is a six crop rotation, which is now in, I think, about its 12th year. And there, so we're looking at comparing what we might call conventional management with integrated management, a major component of which is a tillage difference between inversion and non-inversion tillage in the two halves, but many other management things as well. And so that gives us a chance to look at the whole farming system in the long term. And within that, we've also looked at varieties as well.
We're also starting to look more at the system and how that may change over time. And that's why under this new round of RESAS, Scottish Government funded work, we're looking at a spring barley, continuous spring barley crop with different tillage regimes being examined and also different cover crops in between the spring barley crops, also under investigation for their effects on pests and diseases. So this will be part of a trial that would run for several years. And within that trial, we'll also be building on previous Mains and Lauriston RESAS funded work on biological disease control agents, such as various different strains of fungi and bacteria, and also elicitors of plant defence responses as well. So we're pulling that all together into these systems trials now, go some way to better replicating what goes on in practice. As we said, this is a very much a trajectory that requires many changes to be introduced at the same time because of the synergistic effects and how these different components interact.
There's definitely a lot of trials work being carried out, and I think Henry and Adrian, you're definitely the right people to be talking to us today. So a lot of people are talking at the minute about moving to minimum tillage and no tillage and moving away from the traditional ploughing methods. And I'm sure this is having a big impact on IPM. So just for people who are starting to move across from ploughing to non-inversion tillage, what are some of the things they might need to be thinking about?
So one of the main ones would be management of grass weeds. Generally speaking, there's an increase in grass weed issues as you move from a plough to a min-till based system. There can also be a reduction in broadleaf weed issues because those weed seeds are staying low down the seed bank where they're not going to germinate and pose a threat to the crop. Generally speaking, grass weeds are much less dormant than broadleaf weeds. So that would be one of the main ones, and that's a major challenge for anyone moving to these systems. We're also now considering the implications on disease management. in these min till, reduced till, direct drill systems, non-inversion till systems, there's a lot more crop residue, infected straw, leaf material on the surface, which can harbor disease, and that initial inoculum can really start off an infection way before it would normally happen under a plough-based system.
Can I also just take a one step back as well, which is changing from a ploughed system to a non-inversion tillage system is not just changing your plough for a different sort. It is, well, if you do that, you'll probably run into trouble. If you look at your whole farming system, then you can make a success of it. And there's many farmers who've learned that, sometimes the hard way, but often from the advice of others as well who've gone through that process. Because what you're changing in from one system to another is your nutrition is different. Even things like, you know, speed the soil will warm up in the spring is different. The amount of water in the system, the fertility, because you'll be doing it together with cover crops and things like this, which Henry will probably say something about some research he's doing on that in a minute. But it's about a more balanced, a more complex system. So when we come to IPM, that's the context we've changed in. And as Henry was saying, yes, weeds are going to be very different in that sort of system because your whole management is different as well. With diseases, yes, they can be quite different as well because of crop residue and inoculum and things, but also because the plants respond differently under two different systems. They're responding to changes in the growth environment. They're responding particularly to changes in what's going on in the soil. And many people might have heard of things like induced resistance and things. That's often induced through microbes in the soil. And they will be different under the two systems. And one of the things we've already found is that for some diseases, not all, for some diseases, you'll actually get less of a problem with them because the plants are better prepared, they're primed to respond better to when inoculum lands from something such as a mildew spore or a rust spore. But that applies to certain types of diseases, not to all diseases. But they can be more inherently more resistant to some diseases. Equally, they could be more susceptible to others because maybe different reasons, such as more inoculum in the surrounding environment.
That's very interesting. So do we have some examples of which diseases you're more likely to find or which ones might have the plants being able to resist it better?
Well, I'll just pick up again on that. So I highlighted mildews and rust, for example, there. And this is work that we've actually found through several trials where we've been doing some of these trials on immature sites in terms of the tillage and some on very mature sites where it's been 20 odd years of non-inversion tillage. And we compared ploughed versus non-ploughed on such sites. And we find, for example, something like yellow rust on wheat will be about 20% of the level on the non-inversion tillage compared to the inversion tillage, a real dramatic difference in the level of disease. And the same thing happens to mildew. Mildew, whether it be on wheat, winter barley or spring barley, again, you can get quite a dramatic difference between the two. But these are characterized by the resistance is effective depending on how fast the plant recognizes that a spore's landed on it. It's about speed of response. And probably what happens is the resistance mechanisms are better primed to respond in the non-inversion tillage. And this is probably induced through things like better mycorrhizal development, maybe other soil microbes, which are all known to induce resistance response, or at least prime resistance response. So those are the primary examples there. But other diseases such as, say, Rhynchosporium on barley, we might well get higher levels, but this is not due to the plant being more or less susceptible usually, though we're not certain of that at the moment, but it's more to do with how much inoculum there is there. because in a non-inversion tillage system, you're likely to have a much more debris on the surface. So that'll have inoculum there, which can more readily splash up onto the plant. So that will therefore affect your strategy for controlling those diseases. I don't know if Henry wants to pick up on that in particular.
Yeah, so on the Rhynchosporium story, and this is something that we've found in the last few years where we've had winter barley trials in Fife and Perthshire. And we found consistently that under the direct drill system in which we leave all of the infected crop residues on the surface, there's, because of that initial inoculum, there's much more issues related to Rhynchosporium, which is a bigger yield robber generally than powdery mildew, for example. We'd also expect similar with Septoria, again, trash-borne disease primarily anyway. So you'd expect potentially more issues with Septoria in wheat under these non-inversion tillage regimes as well. It is influenced by many factors, including the variety as well. So we found that those resistant varieties, you're going to get potentially more value for them because of that higher initial inoculum under the min-till system when talking about resistance to those major trash-borne diseases.
Henry, what about differences for T1s and T2s?
Mm-hmm. So within this trial that is joint between SIEC and James Hutton Institute, looking at two different sites, one relatively immature in terms of how long it's been in non-inversion tillage and one that's been into non-inversion tillage for about 20 odd years. So we found last year that actually the more mature site, the site that's been under direct drill for 20 odd years, the best yields were obtained in a non-inversion tillage scenario. Whereas at the site that's typically been ploughed for the last few decades, the plants yielded best under the plough-based system. So there's definitely an effect of site here, which can be quite pronounced in terms of yield responses. And that's partly due to the amount of diseases that are present, but also other things going on with the soil. So quite often we find that because of that initial inoculum and because in this winter barley trial, Rhynchosporium being the main target for fungicides, the main yield robber, there's definitely an advantage of those additional sprays. So the T1 and the T2, potentially even a high pressure situation, also a T0, under the direct drill system where the residues have been left on the surface. Well, actually, in a low disease pressure year, we found that in the plough-based system, in 2021 anyway, one spray, so just a T1, would be sufficient to protect your crop from substantial yield losses. And actually, for the more resistant variety, there was no yield advantage of having any additional spray. So no yield advantage of a T0 or a T2. And plough-based system where you've got a resistant variety.
So if people are looking to move to non-inversion tillage, am I picking it up right that basically they should be sticking at it for a good 5-10 years before they start seeing more of a benefit because they've stuck at it and there's more inoculum?
Not just stuck at it, but think about it's the whole system that you've got to have changed, as I said earlier. If you just, what we tend to do is we compare just changing one thing, such as ploughing or not. That's an artificial situation to some degree. We can learn a lot from it, but the true farming situation is where the whole system is quite different. So yes, absolutely, it needs to be something which is factored into every farming operation and your whole objectives and your all your planning to get it to work. For example, normally, if I compare inversion and non-inversion tillage, you're going to get higher yield in the inversion tillage, the plough situation. But that's not really a fair comparison because I'm comparing under high input, high nutrient conditions geared for that sort of plough type agriculture. You really can't do the totally direct comparison, as we were the scientists trying to change one factor at a time. It's about comparing systems, really. And as Henry pointed out last year, under particular stresses, the site, which was a mature non-inversion one, actually did better than a ploughed system. So that's when they really come into their own, particularly under higher stress years, for whatever reason the stress comes in, whether it's drought stress or temperature or disease or any of these things. They tend to be a much more robust system in a number of ways, and the disease control is just one factor in amongst that.
So as Adrian said, it's really a technological trajectory. So it's not about just changing the way that you cultivate the soil. It's about lengthening the rotation, making it more diverse, introducing cover crops. And that's typically why, because of all these changes to the soil can take quite a while, it's typically why yields can be poorer or more variable in the first few years of moving from a plough-based system to a min-till system. So like with any sort of large-scale conversions, if someone's going to convert organic, you'd probably start small and then gradually build it up over the farm rather than fully changing every operation on the farm in one fell swoop.
It definitely needs a slightly different mindset to make all these changes to make sure you're maximizing what you're doing with it. So does it have an implication on sowing dates as well?
Yes, it probably does. Again, I can't think of any systematic research done on this because it's quite difficult to do. But one of the good things about talking to the farmers who've been into this for quite some time is you will get the knowledge, such as they have learned to sow in a non-ploughed situation a bit later because you need a bit more time for the soil to warm up. Whereas, of course, if you've ploughed, you've stimulated microbial activity and things like this, and you probably will have got it to warm faster. So you really change the seedbed conditions in a substantial way. So you also have to think about how long do you want to leave your seeds sitting there in a sort of cooler, damp environment, etc. So it's looking at the whole thing in a different way. I mean, one of the characteristics of the farmers who are making non-inversion tillage work is they have tried all sorts of things. They have made mistakes. They talk to each other about them and they learn from these things. And sometimes as a researcher, we're catching up behind them. So it's really good to sort of see what they've learned. And then if we can put some method behind it or explanation of the mechanisms, that's even better, that we can then progress it still further. But yes, they're probably reducing a lot of their inputs in terms of fertilizers, pesticides, things like this in that soil system. They're actually increasing their inputs in terms of management and all the planning and monitoring that goes on. So it's not an easy way of doing things, but it's certainly, I think, one which builds a much more resilient system that's going to weather all the things such as high fertilizer prices and climate challenges and things like that. So, yeah.
So in a way, then, it sort of mirrors IPM in terms of there are some things you can do that are relatively straightforward, changing varieties and things like that, adjusting fungicide programs, whatever it may be. But actually to get to a situation where you're almost farming in a very low input system and that's, for want of a better word, resilient, because that can mean lots of different things, but able to buffer against these abiotic and biotic stresses in a manner that means that profitability is not affected, or at least there's no cost in terms of the switch to a more soil-friendly farming system.
Henry, you mentioned earlier about cover crops. I know a lot of farmers are now thinking about, should they put a cover crop in, should they put green manure in? So have you found what impact has doing non-inversion tillage on having a cover crop?
We've just started some work in this area. We've a trial planted in Edinburgh at our Bog Hall farm, looking at the effect of non-inversion tillage and plough systems and different cover crops in a spring barley continuous cropping situation. So we have spring barley, then overwinter cover crop, followed by spring barley. We're going to do that for 4 years under the two different tillage treatments. There are some things to be aware of when selecting cover crops, because some of these cover crops can potentially become weeds on farm. They can harbour diseases and pests, and there be particular issues that people should be aware of around growing brassicas and too many times in the rotation can lead to club root issues, for example. But there's also a lot of other unknowns out there about the effect of particular cover crops on, say, soil-borne pathogens like fusariums, and that's a target of our research going forward.
And how about intercropping? Is there research going on intercropping and the impact of having different varieties together?
Yes, there's been a considerable increase in work on intercropping over the last few years, and in fact we have been involved in one of several European Union projects which have gone on for several years. So there's quite a wealth of experience across similar agricultural regions around Europe. Part of this goes very well with the movement towards lower input agriculture, and one of those lower inputs is, of course, soil tillage. So yes, a lot of people are beginning to look at growing crops with such as a cereal with a legume, and the legume is there to provide fertility, but the combination of the two has many other interactions other than just providing fertility, and it may, for example, reduce the disease impact. In fact, we have data which shows that the disease impact is less than you expect from the components separately. You also get reduced pest impact as well. If you design your intercrops well, you can also look at better weed control, but you can also get them wrong and get worse weed control. So it's about understanding the components and how they grow together. And again, a lot of this can't necessarily be done best in plot trials. That's an important component of it, and we've been doing that. Many other people have been doing that. But a project which is just coming to an end now is one that we had with a lot of Scottish farms. It's called SEAMS, the project, and we have been getting farmers to grow the mixed crops, intercrops that they are interested in for all sorts of different markets and all sorts of different interests. And we've just been bringing that information together and trying to make some sense of it, and also feed back to the farmers what each other are doing as well and all their experiences. And we've done quite a lot of detailed analysis. We've tried to put all this data in a database which will be publicly available, where farmers can look up and say, right, well, will my crop that I want to grow here work? How should I do it? What have other people done before? But our overall analysis already demonstrates a considerable gain in yield, and various problems reduced overall, and this is overall from real farm crops as well as our own plots. So yes, it's certainly a thing to which can have a lot of benefits, but again, it's like non-inversion tillage. Change your whole farming system. It's got a lot more input in terms of management and getting it right. You've got to be prepared to make a lot of mistakes as well as get a lot of benefit out of it. But there are farmers really learning to get this to work very effectively and reduce their inputs. And of course, inputs in terms of fertilizer at the moment, that has a massive advantage.
I suppose one of the main considerations when considering intercropping or companion cropping, whatever you want to call it, is complementary. The harvest dates are going to be in particular, but also other aspects of the agronomy, because if you've got a combination of, say, cereal and broadleaf crops in a mix together, that's going to potentially limit your use of particular pesticides as well, and timing of pesticide use can become tricky as well. Harvest dates may actually be affected by a shift to a different tillage system as well, if you think about the different crop species and how that may interact with the soil to extend or reduce time to maturity, which can be a major burden. And also there's the issue around potential crop failure. If one of the components of the mix fails for whatever reason, you're left with a relatively poor stand of the remaining components, because they're less dense within the field. So there are considerations to there, the potential drawbacks out there, some of which can obviously be remedied by not waiting till everything's fit and ready for harvesting in terms of the grain. And that's why we have such success with cover crops and involving several different species, because we're not having to wait for them to be all fully mature and fit for harvest if we're cultivating them in or harvesting them whilst they're still green as a whole crop.
So if farmers are looking at starting non-inversion tillage, what advice would you give them?
My main advice would be, first of all, talk to other farmers who are doing it and find out what they're doing. And in general, you will find such farmers are really engaged, interested farmers who are keen to share their knowledge, because it benefits both them and the other farmer to discuss it at that sort of level. So that's absolutely my first advice. For not long ago, we did have a fairly eminent farmer come to us saying he wanted to change to non-inversion tillage. And although we spoke to him for some time about that, I said, first of all, go and talk to, and I named some farmers who had already been putting that into practice for some years, because you've got to get the whole farming system to work. One other thing which maybe we could talk about with respect to this is, do you just choose the same variety you would have chosen for your plough system? And if you think about this, all the varieties that we use at the moment, particularly in the cereals, have been bred under plough systems, high inputs of fertilizer, high inputs of pesticides, very highly managed, and the whole the breeding and testing procedure has been extremely successful for deriving new varieties which are really good for those conditions. But why should they be good for very different conditions, where the soil structure is very different, your planting conditions are very different, your nutrients, you're probably trying to reduce the applied nitrogen in particular, you're probably building fertility in a different way. Why should the varieties respond in the same way? Now, in organic farming, some people say, oh, that's a good organic variety, but there's very little actual objective information on which really is a good variety for organic conditions. And part of that is because organic conditions are very different in one place to another. And to a certain degree, this applies to the regenerative farming as well. But tillage is still a major factor which does affect how some varieties grow. And we've looked at quite a lot of varieties under ploughed and non-ploughed conditions and done direct comparisons. Again, it's a trial situation, so has limitations, but certain things, and I hesitate to name varieties for fear that I do them down by saying it doesn't do well in these conditions or things like this without having done sufficient trialing across too many environments. But what a couple of varieties I will mention in terms of spring barley, because we have trialed these under a number of different trials and fairly consistent response. Something like KWS Sassy seems to actually really like non-inversion tillage conditions and often comes out right at the top of our ranking, whereas on the recommended list, I don't know, it's halfway down, it may have just dropped off, I can't remember, it's somewhere near that. It's getting an older variety which is becoming a bit outclassed now. Laureate, which was up at the top of the yielders, that drops down under non-inversion tillage to the middle ranks, so they sort of swap positions. Other varieties fairly neutral. They respond the same to both. But some varieties just swap positions like that. Having said that, in one year, it just did almost the opposite. So there's big environmental interactions as well. But most years, that is the case. Now, why? What's different about those two varieties? Maybe it's something like early vigor or something like that. weed competitiveness if you've got a weedier system in one than the other. It could be a number of different characters we don't know yet, and that's some of the research we're doing at the moment. Rooting characteristics. You'd think it's obviously going to be rooting characteristics because it's about what's going on in the soil. We haven't got the hard evidence for that yet, apart from for root hairs. That's one particular thing, but that's not a normal variable. Yes, root differences are likely to be somewhere in there. And that's the work we're doing at the moment. So we go down the detail route of now, find out which traits are good for a variety, which is good on non-inversion tillage. And then that'll be working with the breeders to feed that into the type of varieties they select for particular farming systems. So again, it's about combining knowledge from what's happening on farm, what's happening in trials, what the breeders are doing, and then working towards the varieties which are suitable for our farming systems now and into the future, as opposed to what we did have, which was a much more intensively managed, more reductionist type approach.
Thinking about markets going forward, there's a lot of indications from industry that this is the trajectory they'd like to go on as well. Thinking about everything else that comes along with farming, reducing inputs, trying to get towards carbon net zero. Last month, Carlsberg announced that over the next few years, and they'll be requiring anybody growing barley for their brands to be growing it under these regenerative agricultural practices, which involves mintill and use of cover crops and more diverse rotations. So it's worth thinking about the markets now, so you can start getting used to working in these systems and understanding how to best optimize them in your farm, because potentially down the line you could be prevented from accessing certain markets if you're still under the conventional sort of plough-based system.
It's great to hear that there's a big move towards trying to reduce the inputs, and the likes of Carlsberg wanting that. You can see which way the requirements are going. So you are right, it's making sure people have the heads up now and they can start planning and seeing how they can change their own systems. Henry, do you have any tips for farmers?
Start small to begin with, perhaps before you invest a lot in machinery and everything else that comes along with it. See if you can trial it and see, because it's going to be more or less difficult depending on the type of land that you've got and the environment you're growing in. Certain soils require a lot of investment before you can reliably and consistently yield under a reduced till system. So start small. Perhaps join an organisation like Base UK, provide great access to other farmers and within the network that will share experiences. And as Adrian said earlier, these farmers are generally quite happy to share their experiences. Quite often they've been the early innovators. Some of them have been doing it for 20 odd years, whereas now it seems to be the majority are sort of thinking about it more. And certainly through the survey work that we've done for the IPM assessment plans on the Plant Health Centre website and the NFU website in England, we found that in England, over half of the farmers surveyed are using some kind of reduced till system, whether that's direct drill or min-till or rotational ploughing, so ploughing every few years. And that's becoming more popular in Scotland, particularly in the nearer the borders. It's maybe more problematic to adopt these sorts of practices in the north of Scotland, where environmental conditions, being too cold and wet for too long around establishment, can prevent maximisation of these types of practices. I don't know if Adrian, if you've got anything to add about that. I don't know if you've done trials or min-till systems up in sort of Aberdeenshire.
No, we haven't.
For that reason.
One of the things, though, about where you can practice this sort of farming and why maybe it hasn't taken up so much further north, is one of the things you need to do is, as you're talking about, use cover crops. And getting cover crops in is the big hurdle. And of course, we're so much later. So trying to establish things in time to get into winter is a major issue. And we have so such a limit in the species which will establish. So by comparison, in the south of England, it's pretty easy to get really good cover crop establishment and some very good and effective cover crops. Doing that in our latitude, and obviously further north, more problematic that becomes. But that being such an essential component of the regenerative agriculture system is crucial to consider.
And also when thinking about weed management, thinking about the opportunity to conduct stale seed beds and false seed beds, whatever you want to call them, to get on top of grass weed issues, you've got much greater a window the further south you are between sort of harvest of one crop and sowing of the next crop that allows you to use these cultural weed control methods. Again, in the far north of Scotland, that window is dramatically reduced quite often, so the possibility of these non-chemical methods of controlling weeds is less.
It is difficult in Scotland when there's so many environmental challenges to deal with, but by the sounds of things, a good dose of trial and error seems to be the way forward, and the people who've already been doing it will be a wealth of knowledge because they will have tried these things, made some mistakes, and been able to give more pointers to farmers who are looking to start it for the first time. So what is next for research for you, Henry?
So we've done some work in the past, quite a lot of work, on the value of elicitors. So these are various different compounds that can influence plant response to stress. They can prime plant responses to biotic attack, by which I mean sort of diseases and pests. We've done a lot of work in the glass houses, in controlled environment rooms, and in the field and under plough-based systems. Now we're taking that into these tillage trials to start looking at the relative influence of these elicitors of plant defence response under the different tillage regimes, and whether actually the preceding cover crop affects the way that the elicitor and other biologicals might be working in the spring barley crops. That's really the next step for us, looking at the tillage regime and the effect of cover crops on soil-borne pests and pathogens in particular, and how that influences disease and also other pests. We're working with the University of Edinburgh, looking at invertebrate pests and beneficials within these same plots. So we can get a full picture as to the relative trade-offs that may occur, because you could be putting some measures in place to control particular pests, which may lead to disease problems and vice versa. So once we have more understanding of the different components, rather than just looking at one or two components in isolation, as we have done in the past, quite often looking at just variety, or just fungicide, or perhaps sometimes a combination of the two, we can now start putting these into real life situations. So we've got more of an idea as to how they work when they interact and whether integrated into a production system.
That sounds fascinating, Henry. We'll have to get you back on in a couple of years' time to tell us what the results are for that. Adrian, same question for you. What are you working on next?
I will pick up very much on what Henry was saying there, because he was really describing almost farming systems, looking at the way the whole system worked, and also to pick up on what I was saying earlier about intercrops, where you're often growing those, particularly if you've got a legume or something like that in there, for the next crop, because a lot of the fertility left in the soil is actually for the next crop. So again, it's a back to this type of farming is much more complex in terms of management, because you're not just managing that crop that you're looking at in the field, you're managing the next crop, and you're also reacting to the previous crop. And it's and the very reason you grow cover crops is often for a direct effect amongst many other things as well. So you're thinking farming system all the time, you're thinking about legacy effects, and other things will come into that, such as what type of product do you use, and what will the subsequent effects of that be, but also what varieties you choose as well. So everything sort of feeds into that in a way. So it is not about not thinking of things in isolation. which we maybe have done too much in the past, and it's been very successful in many ways. But in terms of back to the what we're talking about at the start, IPM, multiple components, we want them not to just be a sum of the parts. We want them to actually be synergistic, because the whole system is becoming better and more resilient in the way it responds.
One thing for us that would really help going forward would be to have farmers who are interested in us conducting research on their trial and are willing for us to do these types of experiment, where we might be ploughing up a portion of their field that's been under direct drill for, say, 20 years for the sake of the trial. Because getting hold of these sites in which they haven't been ploughing for the last, say, 5, 10, 20 years is really tricky, because, as Adrian said, most of our trials have been conducted under a plough-based system. In fact, almost all of them have, and we're hoping to change that going forward to make it more applicable to the new direction of farming.
So if somebody's listening today and they've been thinking they've been at direct drilling for 5, 10, 15 years, they should get in touch with you then, Henry.
Certainly. And as Adrian said, when looking at varietal performance under different tillage regimes, I know the farmer that has a lot of those trials conducted on his land has switched his varieties because of this, because he knows that that variety is doing the best on his land because it's been tested over multiple years. So there are direct benefits to the farmer as well of having these trials conducted on their land, because, as Adrian said, so lots of farmers' fields are different, particularly when you get into the more complicated regenerative agriculture systems, where soil history, cropping history can vary quite substantially even between fields, and let alone between different farms.
That's quite the sales pitch there, Henry. Thanks, Adrian and Henry. Next up, we have the update from the field.
Hi, my name is Mark Basher-Gibbs and I'm a consultant with SAC Consulting. As we are all very well aware, we're coming into a very much later period than usual for getting spring crops into the ground. And for the majority of growers, it'll be into April before ground conditions allow for any kind of field work and seedbed preparation. Spring beans would ideally have been sown in March, and there may be a few that have managed to get beans in the ground. And for crops like spring barley, spring wheat and oats, most crops will be sown through April, with the last to go in possibly as late as early May. In a late season like this, final yields will be influenced to a greater degree by the extent to which plants can tiller before moving into their reproductive growth stages. Soil moisture and good seed-to-soil contact is required for good germination. However, where soil is very wet, such as a season like this, oxygen becomes a limiting factor which can reduce germination. One way we can help mitigate the downsides of late sowing this year is to pay particular attention to seed rates, so we optimise the number of ears per metre squared come harvest. Of course, we know spring barley has a better capacity for tillering, while spring oats and spring wheats less so. When calculating seed rates through April, aim to establish 350 plants per metre squared for spring barley, 360 plants per metre squared for spring oats, and 380 plants per metre squared for spring wheat. Your final seed rate calculation should account for the seed's 1,000 grain weight, the germination percentage, and your expectations for establishment rate. As a general rule of thumb, increase seed rates by 50 seeds per metre squared from your original calculation for each week that sowing is delayed beyond the first week of April. This will help achieve target fertile tiller numbers through to harvest.
Thank you very much for joining us today, and I hope you've enjoyed these excellent speakers. Thank you very much for them taking the time to speak to us. Please subscribe and follow our podcast. And if you have enjoyed it, why not listen to one of the other podcasts on the FAS series? Why not try Stock Talk? They had an excellent episode about the Rare Breed Survival Trust with Martin Beard. Why not listen to something a bit different? See you again next time.
The Farm Advisory Service Podcast. all your advice on livestock, crops and soils, environment, rural business, and more. Brought to you in association with the Scottish Government.